This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, Joe Biden, the presidential candidate and former vice president on the disparity between the markets and the real economy in the midst of the COVID crisis.
The vast majority of American people are suffering right now. They don't measure their public health, their physical security, and their economic stability based on the market.
His plans to win the progressive vote this November from taxes.
We should stop rewarding wealth and start rewarding work a little bit.
To energy policies.
The way we can create millions of jobs, Joe, is move to a rational policy on global warming.
Plus, Biden's bold call for Amazon, taking a tough stance on China, and all the post-game analysis from Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. It's Friday, May 22nd, 2020.
Ready, Andrew?
Squawk Pod begins right after this.
Come on.
This is Squawk Pod.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. U.S. equity futures at this hour. What are you doing?
I'm just saying, Andrew's right. This is a big, big show today. And I'm just saying you have every right to promote.
To actually say that?
Yes, to promote this today. And I'm going to sit back and just nod and say you are absolutely right, Andrew Ross Sorkin. As we'll get to in a second, nobody knows what
That's
I'm talking
a first.
About yet.
Keep that for the records. Andrew, take it away.
And that, with that tease, we've told you basically every morning for, I don't know, it almost feels like almost maybe months now that we've had really big guests and really big conversations. And we've got another one coming up today. We're going to talk all things economy with the former Vice President Joe Biden about the economy, the pandemic, the race for the White House, and so much more. A big interview to look forward to. On this Friday, TGIF, it's Friday, guys. I mean, it's every week. I know all the days roll together, but here we are, and it's Friday.
I thought yesterday meantime, was Friday. I was so disappointed when I found out it wasn't.
It's Friday with 3 days, right? You remember
it's a three-day weekend. I think that makes it a better Friday. The apparent Democratic nominee for president, former Vice President Joe Biden, joins us on the broadcast. Mr. Vice President, thank you for joining us this morning. Nice to see you. What a start
Happy
with the
beauty.
Economy and your expectations. Good morning. Your expectations for where things are headed. We are, of course, now at nearly 15% unemployment, over 36 million people unemployed. And yet the stock market is really where it was last October, as investors are expecting a sharp snapback, a V-shaped recovery. You have economists and other advisors in your midst. Does this make sense to you? Do you expect a V-shaped recovery?
No, I don't. But, you know, that old expression, from your lips to God's ears. And by the way, the vast majority of American people are suffering right now. They don't measure their public health, their physical security, and their economic stability based on the market.
Well, let me ask you this. You have pledged that if you are elected, that you plan to raise taxes on corporations and also high net individuals. Given the pandemic, how quickly do you think you would move on that as you try to balance growing the economy and getting people back into jobs with paying for all of the services that we are paying for now as a result of the pandemic?
Look, my tax policy is based on a simple proposition. We should stop rewarding wealth and start rewarding work a little bit. Let's raise the capital gains tax for people making over $1 million a year to ordinary income. Let's reverse the Trump tax cut. Imagine if we had that $2 trillion now as we go into, God willing, recovery, which is a long way away as I see it right now, in which they use to buy back hundreds of billions of dollars of stock, tens of billions of dollars, boost wages for the workers. Did they do that? No. Let's use the money to invest in the middle class. You know, almost 40 million Americans have filed for unemployment. And you know what the White House is proposing? More tax cuts for corporate America. I've got a novel idea. How about some relief for Main Street? And this entire recovery program, the entire stimulus has been passed, several trillion dollars. What was it done for? To keep people employed. To keep people employed. And what's the president done? Fired the inspector generals. The vast majority of the money's gone to the very wealthy and the major corporations. Not a single penny's gone to the Main Street fund that was set up. Not one penny in the last 3 months. And the PPP, what happens? People are getting locked out. And so, look, I mean, we didn't advertise. That's not what it was advertised to do. And the American people are getting a little frustrated, They're getting extremely frustrated. And, you know, the president's response to all this has cost lives and it's cost jobs. And the way to fix the economy is get public health response correct and, structure economy. What we're doing now is upside down. The bigger you are, the faster you get the money. The smaller you are, you don't get the money. And taxes are to build back a better economy, boost it, create a middle class and create jobs, paycheck protection program, health care, confidence come back. Hey, look, I just think that he's got this all backwards, but he doesn't seem to care much about it.
Well, let me just ask you, though, about a couple of things that you mentioned and unpack some of this just on the tax front first. And I understand that you want to raise taxes. The question is how quickly you do that in the midst of a in the midst of this pandemic and in the midst of trying to get the economy to recover.
Nobody making under $400,000 would have their taxes raised, period. Bingo. Let's get people back to work. Let's get them to work. Now, look, here's the deal.
What about corporations?
Tell me how many people are investing that tax break they had in new jobs. Give me your numbers, man. Come on. Let's get real. Well, people are hurting.
Well, I absolutely understand that. I'm trying to just understand. I'm trying to understand as you're trying to balance these issues, especially when it comes to corporate taxes, how quickly you move on that, given that we want to get jobs and get people back to work.
Okay, let me ask you the rhetorical question. What jobs have they created if we give them more of a tax cut? The president's talking about a greater tax cut for corporations. You tell me what you think, how many jobs that will create in the next 6 months. You're the expert. You guys, I'm not being a wise guy. I'm not being trying to be like Trump. Right. I'm not criticizing you. But really, think about it. Look, the main people need to get back to work. And the idea they're already talking about, you know, the president's phrase, what is it? We have time to wait. I mean, they're not even going out and helping making sure that the states have the money to keep their firefighters on the job, to keep the cops on the job, teachers on the job, all of those things that do create income and do generate growth. What are we doing? I get frustrated. With the situation.
Let me ask you this about the bailouts. You know, the bailouts were intended, as you know, to keep people employed. And my question to you is, do you believe that companies that get bailouts that don't keep people employed, and we're already starting to hear that the airlines September 30th, are going to potentially lay off people, whether they should still get those bailouts? And not only that, whether shareholders should be wiped out and whether effectively some of these companies should be nationalized. You participated when we did this with the automobile companies, after 2008, and taxpayers got a piece of those automobile companies.
Well, look, the taxpayers are coughing up all this money. And the idea is to keep people employed. How can you tell? Now, the largest employers are small businesses. Collectively, they employ more people, as you know, as well as I do. What is happening to them? What help have they gotten? In the Paycheck Protection Program, what's happened? I see we have American Airlines, Delta Airlines, et cetera, all up there. I got it. But what about those stores along Main Street in those small cities and towns? There's no reason why they can't do a little of both. The biggest corporate bailout in American history is asking next to nothing of corporate America. And besides that, the president has gone out and fired all the inspectors general. I am focused on keeping people employed, keeping them on a payroll, so that when we get to actually recovery, we're now just talking about stimulus to keep things from getting worse. And the idea of putting people back to work is going to occur when we begin to really invest in America, when we invest significantly in infrastructure, when we invest significantly in all the research and development has to be done to compete with not just China, but around the world. We can build back better. But the more people that are out of all those little small businesses, they go out of work, they go out of business, they're out of business. They're gone. And so why did they pass the $2 trillion program and focused on helping keep people employed? What's happened?
Mr. Vice President, wanted to ask you about wanted to ask you about the pharmaceutical industry, in large part because the Democratic Party, as you know, has long criticized that industry. And now humanity is so dependent on their innovations in this pandemic. And so the question I'd ask you, and we were talking about some of these efforts at vaccines, would you look to put price controls on a vaccine or a therapeutic if one's found?
No, I tell you what, if one is found, I would make sure that every single person in America is able to get a vaccine, period, without any cost. And I would do the same thing with testing right now. And I'd make, look, we need a healthcare policy. We need to be able to provide people the ability to stay healthy and get healthy. They're the things we need to do, because all the talk about opening up, people aren't going to open up until they have the confidence to know that they gather together, they're not going to get sick. You know, you saw that Columbia study. You saw other studies that if the president acted just 2 weeks earlier, there'd be 54,000 people, more people alive than there are today. We have to move. And what do we have to move on? We have to move on making sure that ordinary people who are breaking their neck, people making hourly wages, who are carrying the rest of us on their back in terms of this virus, that they are able to get the kind of medical help they need as it relates to this pandemic.
Mr. Vice President, it's Joe Kernan. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it this morning.
Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm great. You know, some Democratic pundits, say that Sanders and Warren voters are essential for you to win. I know you've probably seen that, but some aren't quite there yet. Others point out, though, that your candidacy surged when it became apparent to mainstream Democrats that Sanders might be the nominee, and then they flocked to you, a more moderate, perhaps, candidate. Are you prepared now to say you're going to govern as a progressive and enact programs in the mold of Sanders and Warren? And if so, what does that say to either moderate Democrats or independents or even some Republicans dissatisfied with President Trump?
I'm prepared to say that I have a record of over 40 years and that I'm going to beat Joe Biden. Look at my record. The fact is that some areas that I think, for example, I think health care is a right, not a privilege. I do not support Medicare for all. I will not support Medicare for all, but I do support making sure that Obamacare is around with a public option for those who can't afford, those who qualify for Medicaid and they don't get in their state, they would be able to buy, they would be able to be automatically enrolled in the public option of Medicare. That would, but I do not support a, you know, forgiving debt loan for every single solitary person, no matter where you went to school. But I do support the idea. If, in fact, you have a student debt as a consequence of going to a public university and your income is under $125,000, it should be forgiven. I do believe that anyone going to school that, in fact, goes to a public university and or community college, they should be able to go for free if income is under $125,000. My wife has a great expression. Any country that out-educates is going to out-compete us. We have a whole generation that's being put behind the eight ball, Joe. You know that. They're in real trouble.
Can we talk real quickly just about one part of our economy that's so important, Mr. Vice President? I'm talking about the energy industry. And I think about the progressive wing of the party and the Green New Deal. In recent days, you said you would shut down the Keystone project permanently. We know that the industry is already in dire straits, given what's happening with global demand. I mean, what would we do to preserve? What would you do to try to preserve these high-paying jobs, tens of thousands of high-paying jobs in the energy sector? Would you close down Keystone and make it difficult?
Yeah, look, I was against. Oh, I'm sorry, Joe.
No, I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
I've been against Keystone from the beginning. It is tar sands that we don't need, that, in fact, is in a very, very high pollutant. Number one, I'm not going to go shut down, for example, you know, they talk about all these other programs. The other programs that exist, we're going to transition gradually to get to a clean economy. But the idea of shutting down Keystone as if that is the thing that keeps the oil industry moving is just not rational. And by the way, it is not economically nor, in my view, environmentally make any sense. But, for example, the whole idea of whether or not we're going to stop fracking. I would not stop fracking. I'd gradually move away from fracking. I would just not do more fracking on federal lands. I would gradually move us out of the position of relying on oil and gas. And coal. Look, Joe, one of the things you've seen is that no one's going to build another coal-fired plant, period, no matter what the law is. Because now you can build a renewable energy or you can build a natural gas plant that works better and is cheaper and can have less fewer problems. And a lot of the folks who listen to your program every morning, and I listen to it frequently, are already pricing in the price of carbon. So, look, the way we can create millions of jobs, Joe, is move to a rational policy on global warming, which I've laid out in detail. And for example, the idea that you want to create good paying jobs, let's make sure over the next 10 years we put in 550,000 charging stations along the highways we're building back up to deal with the present environmental circumstance we have, as well as new highways. The idea is that we should be investing significantly in high-speed rail and rail. We know that we can take millions of automobiles off the road if we do that. We should have a president who's down right now talking with the president of Brazil saying, look, stop burning the Amazon. It's the greatest carbon sink in the world. More of what, in fact, you, in fact, absorb every day is it equals every bit of carbon that we're putting out in the air every day here in the United States. So we're going to get the world to come up with $20 billion to help you all like we did in organizing the rest of the world. But stop burning the Amazon. You know, there's so many things, Joe, that we can do without and create millions of new jobs, good paying jobs. We should be we should become the net exporter of the new technology by investing the $40 billion in the $400 billion I'm proposing in research and development for new ways to absorb carbon, new ways to, you know, make sure that we can have a system nationwide that can transmit coal and wind across the country. But we're not investing in those things, Joe. We're not investing in any of it. They all create jobs. The biggest employer, fastest growing employer, is in the area of solar and wind. And by the way, wind does not cause cancer, windmills.
Mr. Vice President, thank you for being with us today. I'd like to talk about an area that our audience definitely cares about. That would be mergers and acquisitions. Elizabeth Warren, who's been mentioned as a frequent potential running mate for you, has said that she's completely opposed to any deals going through right now, whether that be with big companies, with hedge funds, with private equity. And then Amy Klobuchar, who's actually been asked to undergo the vetting process to be a potential running mate for you, has said that she's had problems with the idea of Uber and Grubhub teaming up. Oh, well, that's what we've read or heard in the news. But let's just call them potential running mates because they were there. I just wonder, what are your thoughts on deals at this time? Do you think they should be banned? And are there mergers and acquisitions that bother you?
Well, I think that what we should do is we should take hard looks at it, real hard looks, and decide whether or not it's likely to increase competition or reduce competition. And, you know, I'm not making that judgment now. What I'm saying is I'd have the antitrust department of my administration take a hard look at whether or not these mergers increase the prospect of growth, increase the prospect of competition, increase the prospect of employment or not. And but I'm not going to make a blanket judgment on that right now.
But it's the idea of increased labor or increased employment that would be your measure that you'd be looking at all of these through?
Increased in competition. Competition. Does it limit competition? Is it, in fact, go against the notion of the antitrust laws we have? That's what I'd be looking at.
Mr. Vice President, just following up on that issue, Elizabeth Warren has talked about trying to break up Amazon, a company that so many Americans have become so reliant on and provided essential services during this pandemic. Would you seek to break that company up?
I think Amazon should start paying their taxes. OK, I don't think any company, I don't give a damn how big they are. The Lord Almighty should absolutely be in a position where they pay no tax and make billions and billions and billions of dollars, number one. Number two, I think that companies should be in a position where they start paying their employees a decent wage and protect their employees. And so that's the whole notion of this is, are you playing the game fairly? Like it was set up long before. What's the capitalist system all about? The capitalist system about everybody doing the having a dealing fairly and dealing straight up with the American people and with their employees. We're not investing nearly as much as we should be doing in a whole range of areas. You know that study that was done by the University of Massachusetts in 2004-14, corporate America, and I come from the corporate capital of the world, Delaware, and I'm not anti-corporate, but here's the deal. The idea that they made several trillion dollars and all the studies show that 54% went to buy back their stock, 37% to make sure their stockholders got rewarded, leaving 9% for research, development, raises, employment, et cetera. Come on, man. That's not the capitalist system. Friedman is not alive and well, but he seems to be running the show here.
Mr. Vice President, wanted to ask you also about, you had referenced municipalities and states, some of which may very well need to be bailed out. The House Democrats have sought to repeal the cap on state and local property tax deductibility, SALT, as you know, but it would also be a huge tax break on the 1%. What would you do?
Well, what I would do is I would do what we did before. I would make sure that there's sufficient money in a recovery program to allow states and local governments to be able to maintain essential workers. And that is firefighters, cops, first responders generally, keeping their county hospitals open, making sure that the teachers are able to be employed. Because as you know, and you guys know it better than most, that all those states and localities have a requirement to have a balanced budget. They have been clobbered with almost 40 million people unemployed. So they've lost enormous amounts of tax revenue. And the idea that Mitch McConnell, who's I've worked with a long time, says, let him declare bankruptcy. Come on. Give me a break.
What
are we talking about?
Mr. Vice President, I just wanted to clear up one more thing for sure. So you're on record. You would repeal the Trump tax cuts immediately and then raise taxes even further right away, even if the economy is still in the midst of this pandemic? Would you do that if elected?
I would repeal the $2 trillion tax cut for the folks who are making over $1 million a year because it's demonstrated very little or no growth.
Corporations,
I would insist.
The
corporate tax rate, I'd move back to what I had proposed at 28%.
Okay.
What we had proposed at 28%. Because I want to make sure that we see that these corporations, that's not going to take them under. What I would not do in the meantime, here's the biggest deal. I would stop rewarding through this program that we have, the $2 trillion program put in place to try to stimulate the economy. I would get the money to Main Street. I have the Paycheck Protection Program, the Small Business Program, with the Main Street Lending Program. It's out there with billions of dollars. It hadn't lent a single solitary dollar in over 3 months. Farmers who are needed the help, we're told that they haven't gotten any of the money out and is not going to go out until June the 1st. Why is he so slow off the mark? His slowness is costing lives and costing jobs and costing our ability to rebound.
Mr. Vice President, a final question, and it's on the news this morning. Just wanted to get your thoughts and really your thoughts on how you think the United States should react and what you would do if you were the president at this time. China's legislator, as you may have seen, unveiled a sweeping proposal of new security laws that effectively take a firm control of Hong Kong and really crack down on the anti-government protesters. What would you do?
I'd be at the UN with my UN ambassador, and I'd be insisting and calling out what the United States has always done. Overwhelming violation, not only of an agreement, but of human rights. The silence on our part has been devastating for people around the world. All it does is encourage thugs and dictators, which, in fact, I think the president has some kind of affinity for. Look at who he embraces and look who he pokes in the eye. The idea that we would remain silent. Look, We have governed not merely by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. That's why the rest of the world has repaired to us. It's the power of our example. And we should not remain silent. We should be calling the rest of the world to condemn their actions.
Mr. Vice President, we want to thank you for this conversation this morning. We hope we can do it again with you soon.
Well, I hope so, too. I really do.
Hope to talk to you again.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Squawk Pod will be right back. You're listening to Squawk Pod. Here's Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Former Vice President Joe Biden joining us this morning right here on Squawk Box, talking about taxes and so many other issues, guys, about the economy. And clearly there's going to be a huge debate about taxes on the other side of this pandemic, whether you raise them and really when do you raise them.
Right.
In the midst of a crisis, it may be a complicated one, especially as we talked about. How do you balance the idea of growth with also paying for all of these services and rescue efforts that we've undergone?
Right. That's, I mean, anybody that's in that in the White House at that point is going to look at the deficit and look at the revenue that we have from a slow economy, and it's not going to be anywhere near what's necessary. And then you're going to get back to the age-old argument about whether you try to keep taxes low to stimulate growth or whether you just tax to bring in revenue. I you know what I feel, Andrew. I've always felt that the companies are the ones that hire people. That's the private sector that create the jobs, and they compete globally.
Right.
So I want to make it as easy as possible for companies to flourish and compete globally so that they're able to keep people employed, which is why I've never thought that. I don't think going back to 28% is a good move. I don't know. Rich people, that's different.
Well, look,
that sit on money that's in a bank, you know, you want to do that, fine. But corporations,
It's going to be interesting. I think a couple things. If the market continues apace, I was just going to say on the wealthiest. And one of his things, by the way, is capital gains. He's going to make ordinary income taxes. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But I think it's going to be a harder argument on the wealthy, on individuals. The corporate story is going to be an interesting one, because when do you do that? Do you do that? And at some level, you could also argue that in an environment where the government is now offering effectively an insurance policy for all corporations, maybe they should pay for that. The question is, I think more than anything else, would be if you were going to raise taxes, would be when.
You know, energy, too. You know, it's so cheap. How do you... We still use a lot of energy, and if it's cheap and it's a quick, it's going to be hard to transition to more expensive renewables at this time. And as we pointed out, it's led a renaissance over the past 10 years, fossil fuels. And if we're not going to, you know, that's going to be tough to transition to that, too. I still want to know.
I just think dealing with the progressive politicians on the left wing of the party, how do you bring them in? Because so many of the people who have been considered a potential running mate for him or who've been mentioned as a running mate for him, I think have kind of gone out there and tried to stake their claims to say that big deals shouldn't be done, that there's all kinds of other issues that they're watching and that they're kind of nailing back. They want the big banks investigated for how they handed out PPP. Yeah. And I think how he kind of handles that, and that will tell us a lot about what's to come for the future business, too.
The conundrum that the Democratic Party finds, and that's what I tried to encapsulate quickly, that, you know, he can't win without, it's almost like the primary. You know how in the primary a candidate has to go to where you know, to the most extreme side of things to get elected? And now to win the election, he's got to curry favor with Sanders and Warren people. But at the same time, you saw what happened when the Democratic Party thought about running Sanders. They were like, they could see that was a no-win situation. And how do you get independence?
The one thing he did stake out is to say that he is not for Medicaid for all, Medicare for all.
Not for that.
I'm sort of the view, though, that he doesn't have to necessarily try to appeal. The voters that liked Elizabeth Warren or that liked...
do they show up, though?
You know, that liked Warren are not, they're coming with him, whether they love him or not.
In droves? They got to show up in droves, just like in...
I think they show up in droves because of their feelings about the current president more than... It may not be that they're in love with you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
I think that there's a back and forth here. We'll see.
Well, we'll see. When I interview Trump, one question lasts about 6 minutes, too, doesn't it? Doesn't it? And I see that that happens with these guys. They got certain things that they want to say, and I wish we had more time, but the reason we don't have more time is because the answers take so long. Anyway.
That's the podcast for today. Memorial Day is a market holiday, but we will have a bonus Squawk Pod for you. If you subscribe, it will be in your feed on Monday morning. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. You can catch them on CNBC weekday mornings at 6 a.m. Eastern. And hey, subscribe to and share Squawk Pod. We'll meet you back here on Monday. Have a good long weekend.